The Night Owl Podcast, Episode 30, The Gaslight Baker Theater, Part 1. Welcome to the Night Owl Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Ballou, and this is a place for all you restless spirits out there to tune in and hear true tales of the paranormal. I hunt these stories down, capture them from the mouths of those who experience them, and share them with you, right here. If you have a story to tell, we're currently looking for more personal ghost stories, so if you or someone you know has one, please submit it to us for consideration. Go to thenightowlpodcast.com, click on the Submit Your Story page, and let us hear your ghost story. We'd love to consider it for the show. Lockhart is a picturesque small Texas town, infamously deemed the barbecue capital of Texas, because of its long-standing establishments serving some of the best in the state. But Lockhart's more than just a popular day trip destination for many Texans looking for some good brisket. The history of the town dates back to the 1840s and includes early Comanche raids, brave Texian settlers, and rowdy cowboys driving longhorns up the Chisholm Trail. If the walls of the many still-standing buildings of downtown Lockhart could talk, we can only imagine the stories they'd tell. But in tonight's episode, one such building appears to have a voice. Many, in fact. The Gaslight Baker Theater is located in the heart of downtown Lockhart, and many in the community have had strange personal experiences there. It's believed that the theater is haunted by numerous specters, and these paranormal residents have each been given their own unique name. There's the Laughing Lady, whose laughter has been heard by many. There's Colonel Baker, the original owner of the theater, who seems to watch over the building and cause mischief ever so often. And then there's the elusive, more ominous presence, who all say inhabits stage right and has been oddly named Other Guy. Join me as I pack my gear, hit the road, and travel to Lockhart, Texas, to uncover more details about the undocumented hauntings of the historic Gaslight Baker Theater. Stay tuned. This episode is sponsored by Green Mountain Flower Company, dedicated to one thing, bringing wellness to the world through concentrated, terpene-rich CBD oil sourced from organic premium industrial hemp. At Green Mountain Flower Company, they believe in the power of the human spirit and have designed an incredible lineup of CBD products for you. They have water-soluble CBD additives perfect for your coffee, tea, and smoothies, pain-relieving balms, tinctures, supplements, gummies, bath bombs, and even pet treats. When it comes to your health or your pets, cutting corners isn't an option. Everything Green Mountain Flower Company sells is 100% organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, and without heavy metals or insecticides. And right now, through October, Night Owl listeners can get 10% off all of their products. So visit greenmountainflowercompany.com, use coupon code NIGHTOWL, and harness the healing power of CBD. At Green Mountain Flower Company, the purity of nature is in every drop. Our most recent investigation took us about 35 miles southeast of Austin to the quiet, picturesque town of Lockhart, Texas. Lockhart is the county seat of Caldwell County and has been home to many people over the years. Comanche tribes, early Texian settlers, and wild, boisterous cowboys traveling along the famous Chisholm Trail have all left an impression on this historic area. The town is now home to approximately 14,000 residents who either have deep family roots here or have been lured here by the small-town charm and beauty that Lockhart provides. Lockhart has become a new home of choice for breweries, musicians, boutique owners, and others seeking to escape the big city hustle and bustle and skyrocketing high costs of living. Lockhart's also a great day trip or weekend getaway destination for many of us Austinites. Nearby Lockhart State Park offers camping, swimming, hiking, biking, golfing, and swimming along Clear Fork Creek for the outdoor enthusiasts. Lockhart has officially been dubbed the barbecue capital of Texas by the state legislature, so a dining excursion to Black's, Smitty's, or Kreitz Barbecue Market should definitely be on the agenda. The town square offers many opportunities for shopping and dining, and the downtown area is home to many historic buildings, such as the beautifully restored Caldwell County Courthouse, the County Jail Museum, and the oldest continually operating library in the state of Texas, the Dr. Eugene Clark Library. One other historic building in downtown Lockhart is the subject of an interesting email I received from Tim Peterson in December of 2019. Tim had become a listener of our show and knew that we conducted investigations into properties with purported paranormal activity associated with them. In the email, Tim asked if the Night Owl team would be interested in investigating an old theater located in downtown Lockhart that had been built in the early 1900s and has had many reported instances of paranormal activity. My answer, of course, was absolutely. The Gaslight Baker Theater, located at 216 South Main Street in Lockhart, Texas, was built in 1920 by a Colonel A.D. Baker. Mr. Baker wanted to build the newest, most modern, and most beautiful theater in the state of Texas. The theater's grand opening was held on October 29th, 1920, pretty much 100 years ago today, actually, and an estimated crowd of 2,000 people showed up to see and experience this brand new theater that hosted rich, opulent furnishings, a glass-walled cry room, and even air conditioning. With a rich and colorful history, I was excited to venture to Lockhart and dive into investigating the Gaslight Baker Theater. We've featured a lot of unique venues on the show, but we'd yet to investigate a historic theater. I did some preliminary digging, but could not find anything on the hauntings or lore surrounding the Gaslight. So this case was going to be a fresh new haunting that we'd slowly start to unravel through in-person interviews and phone calls. So I packed my gear and hit the road for Lockhart, Texas. We are here in Lockhart, Texas, at the Gaslight Baker Theater downtown. It is Thursday, February 13th, 2020. I'm here with Alexis and Tao. We're about to meet many of the employees that have experiences here, and I believe people on the historic committee or board for the theater here that have had experiences.
My name is Tim Peterson. I'm a board member of the Gaslight Baker Theater in Lockhart, Texas. I've been involved with the theater for 10 years. I've been in this capacity for two. I've personally experienced some activity, but I'll get into more of the history of the theater first. Built in 1920 by Colonel Baker, as was sort of the custom at the time. They would take military titles. He wasn't really a colonel, sort of like Colonel Sanders. He built it originally as a vaudeville theater with a vaudeville stage. And sometime in the 30s, they did some updates to the building, and it would have been sort of your classic gilded type features like in the Paramount in Austin. But in the 50s, it was turned into a movie theater, and a lot of those features were removed. So unfortunately, it's kind of bare. We've lost a lot of those features. And it sits today pretty much the same as it was in the 50s. Although today, we have started showing some classic movies, but the theater is primarily used for community theater. So you'll have a lot of local people that are in the theater. We have people that come from Bastrop and Austin sometimes, Wimberley, and they'll act on the stage. We also do an occasional concert. So it's really kind of a community entertainment hub is what we would call it. It's one of the coolest places in Lockhart to sit and take in a play or a band. It's also the most economical thing to do for as far as entertainment in this town.
I noticed online that from what I saw, really it hasn't had many owners. It's kind of rare for an old building like this. So it seemed like it just had Baker, one other owner, and then now the board, right? Can you kind of talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, the Valentine family, they owned this building, and I believe that they also owned a drive-in theater. So they were into the movies. They did movies. There's actually a couple of pictures that are hanging in the lobby, and I believe those to be Mr. and Mrs. Valentine. I've talked to folks that have lived in Lockhart for many years, and they have very fond memories of Mrs. Valentine. She was very happy. She was good with the kids when they came. The kids would sit with their arms around the girlfriend, and she would make them stop because that was naughty. And then the Valentines, I don't know the circumstances. And at some point, the Lockhart Community Theater bought the building, and then it became community theater. Actually, I believe that it might have been 2000. So there's been live theater going on here in 20 years. So after Lockhart Community Theater purchased the building, they were doing live theater in here for a while. And another local theater was also doing live theater. And the two combined forces became one. And that really strengthened the live performing arts in the little city of Lockhart. It's a fairly well-respected community theater within Central Texas. You know, I've only been involved in it a relatively short time. You know, of the 100 years, I've been involved in it for 10 and loved it so much that I wanted to spend more time with it and donate my time.
How far back does the lore go about the place being haunted? Can you kind of start us as far back as you can go?
Well, as far as I can go is Colonel Baker is said to haunt the place. He's said to be in here. He's not known to be a mean spirit or causing any trouble. He's known to be maybe more of a joker. I think occasionally things might get misplaced in the theater. Somebody will put something down in one spot and then they'll go back and it's gone. The next one that I've heard about, the other one is Other Guy. He's kind of mean. He's known to pull hair. And I think the Other Guy is the one that when I go in certain places in the theater that I get that hair standing out on the back of my neck. I think that's Other Guy. And then the other one that I'm aware of is Laughing Lady. I think Laughing Lady is relatively new. I kind of think that she's Mrs. Valentine. Based on what I know about Mrs. Valentine being nice and jovial and good with the kids and happy, Laughing Lady is her laughing, talking, and that's been my experience with Laughing Lady. And when I experienced it with my wife, we didn't know what it was at the time. We had never heard about Laughing Lady.
My name is Clara. I am Tim's wife. We were here at the theater. He was doing a time lapse of the set being built.
I'd come into the balcony to set up a camera. I was doing time lapse photos of a set build. And it was probably about 5 in the afternoon in the summer, so the sun's out. You know, we're not feeling anything weird. I'm in the balcony. My wife is down in the main auditorium looking at the stage.
We heard this. It sounded like somebody coming into the theater.
And I'm up there, and I hear a lady walk in. Actually, I didn't hear a door, but I hear a lady in the lobby say, hello.
It was like a hello. And I actually thought it was my friend Tammy because it kind of reminded me of her voice. So I thought, what? Tammy must have stopped by. But it was very clear. It didn't sound muffled. It was kind of weird how audible and clear it was, but it still sounded like it was coming from that direction. So I go out to the lobby. But what was odd is at the same time I go out into the lobby, Tim's coming down from upstairs.
And I start coming down. I'm thinking that's our friend. At the time, she was the board president, Tammy, and get downstairs and look around. There's nobody there. My wife comes from the main auditorium into the lobby, and we kind of look at each other and we said, did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that.
And we look at each other and nobody's there, and we're like, did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. And we're like looking around. We went outside and looked on the street. We're like, maybe it was somebody on the street. I was like, there's no way. Just the clarity of it, that it was not coming out from the street. It was someone that said hello. and the fact that we heard it pretty much the same way, but he was in the balcony and I was down here in the theater, and it both drew us out to the lobby.
I'm looking for some logic on what that could have been. To this day, I still don't know what that was. For me, I have some hearing loss, and so it was surprising that I would have actually heard something coming from the lobby. You know, I mean, like the tinnitus is, you know, like right now everything's just ringing, but when I heard it, it was pretty distinct. And as bad as my hearing was, I don't think I would have heard anybody normally from coming from the lobby. Backing it up on how we figured out that it was Laughing Lady, we were talking during the run of that show in the lobby with our friend Tammy, who we thought it was, and said, you know, funny thing happened. We thought that you had walked into the lobby and she wasn't here. She's out of town or something like that. And another board member is like, oh, you met Laughing Lady. And as soon as he said that, then my spidey senses started to go off. I was trying to look for the logic, and I was sort of resistant to it being paranormal. And then when he said that, and I'd never heard of Laughing Lady before, and he sort of validated that there may have been something to do with Laughing Lady.
I'm Mary Kay Wood. My sister, Lori, has lived in Lockhart for many years, and I recently moved here back in 2018. My sister did some directing for Silent Skies here at the Gaslight, and I was the stage manager.
So I'm Lori Cordova. We were directing this summer. The show was Silent Sky. It was a small cast of five people. It was during Tech Week. It was late in the rehearsal process. We were upstairs in the balcony watching rehearsal. The artistic director was here, Eric. Besides that, it was just Mary Kay and I up in the balcony. And Eric, I think, was sitting out here in the house on house left somewhere.
One time during a rehearsal, Lori and I were upstairs in the balcony watching the scenes. And we heard someone laughing downstairs. And we thought, that's kind of weird. Who came in?
And there were people, women, it sounded like two women laughing at really appropriate places in the show.
And it was definitely a woman's laugh. At the time, I kind of thought maybe it was two women. And they were coming from this general area. And we were upstairs. We couldn't see them because of the view.
Like I said, there are, you know, this is a very active theater. So there are lots of familiar people that wander in and sit down for a minute and watch rehearsal. And I thought it was Tammy, who was our president at the time, or, you know, people that come in and just take care of the maintenance on the theater. And I thought, oh, good, they're laughing, right? And later on, some of the actors reported that they thought that it was Mary Kay and I that were laughing from the balcony, which was not accurate. We were not laughing, and there was no one here.
And when we came downstairs, we asked who was here, and there were no women. Going through rehearsal in the show, there were some pretty funny points. And during those times, we would hear somebody laughing. It was definitely female. They were laughing at appropriate funny parts. It wasn't extreme laughter. It was just, it was loud enough that we could hear it from the balcony. And it was just like a normal laugh, just like a somebody who was enjoying a performance.
My name is Pat Stroka. As a kid, I'd always loved the theater, and I loved going to watch the theater. I loved that experience, kind of like reading a book where you're just outside of your head, and you get that chance to go and see people make that happen in front of you.
My name is Taisha, and I am assumed to be resident of Lockhart because of the Gaslight Baker Theater. My husband and I have been married for about 6 years back in 2006, and he encouraged me to go audition. I had taken a hiatus after college from the theater, and he said, I've seen you on stage before singing in bands and stuff, but I haven't seen you act.
So, you know, in life, it's been kind of cool that I ended up with an actor, and I got to watch her do all these things and direct and be in a lot of shows, and, you know, which kind of makes what eventually has happened with the things that we've seen at the Baker kind of more important. So for my birthday 1 year, she had, I had asked her to get back in the theater, and if you could go back and just audition for something. And so she got a spot in on Golden Pond at the Baker, and I just fell in love with that theater. I think the first time I was there, it was just the decor and the things in the back that have been there forever. There's signatures from performers from the 20s and 30s back there. It's an amazing spot to be in, and in the history that you feel just being there is pretty neat. And for a little background on this story I was going to tell, at this time, there was a bar just down the street from the theater, and Taisha was directing a show. So there had been a couple of times where people had just walked in from the bar, you know, thinking it was another bar, or they wanted to use the bathroom, something. So we always locked the door. You were always very vigilant that you had locked the door so no one would get in there. So this one particular night, I always play tennis on Wednesdays. She was directing the show that was going to open, I think, that weekend, maybe the next. So she was going to be there by herself working. And the plan was that I was going to drop her off and go home and feed the dogs and go play tennis in Austin and then swing back to Lockhart and pick her back up. So I'd help her as much as I could, and it was that time where I really have to go now. So I have to go feed the dogs, and I've got to get to Austin, and I have to, you know, I don't have any time left. So we're literally kissing goodbye, that I'm about to walk out the door, and in the balcony, there are two costume rooms up there, a men's and a women's, and we both heard footsteps in the men's costume room. We both heard footsteps. I mean, it was so clear that it was footsteps that we didn't say, did you hear that? We both just looked at each other. Obviously, to me, what had happened was somebody from the bar had, you know, wandered in and we didn't hear them and they were up in the balcony. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, I have to go deal with this. It's only she and I at the theater. So as I'm taking a couple more steps to go, you know, kind of reluctantly, gosh, I have to go deal with this, we heard the steps again. And I go up the steps and I open up the door and, you know, thinking that someone's going to jump out at me, and there's nobody there. If you can imagine a costume room in a theater that's been around that long, the men's costume room is packed. I mean, to get another suit or costume or whatever in there would have been a challenge. It was packed. So I've got my cell phone and I'm shining it around, you know, thinking that at any moment someone's going to jump out at me, because we heard them twice. There's somebody in there, and nothing. There's nothing. And it's like a lot of coats and suits, and so I can see the bottom. So I think I'm going to bend down and I'm going to use my cell phone and I'm going to see this guy's ledge. I know he's hiding in here. And I look everywhere and there's nobody, not one person. And I mean, I had to leave 10 minutes ago. I'm like going, shit, I can't leave my wife here. You know, this is just too weird. And I just kept looking and there was nobody. There was not one person in there. So I go down and I try to explain how much I looked and I left. It was so late by then. I didn't go home and feed dogs like we had planned. I went to Austin and I played tennis and I just came back. You know, the dogs could wait to eat dinner. And I came back, you know, worried about it, and you know, nothing else had happened. She was fine. But I mean, to this day, we tell stories, that same story of people saying, it happened. We knew it.
So my story about theater and ghosts at the theater revolves around that balcony and specifically around the women's costume shop. As both an actor and a director, I've had weird experiences in the women's dressing room where it's inherently evident that it's time to go. You know, batteries will go dead on a cell phone, you know, even though you've just brought it to the theater, it was 100%. You know, you turn a light on and it's just an energy change. But this was way beyond all of that. So I was directing a show called Almost Maine in 2018. I had a cast of, I believe it was like 11 people, a real simple stage, but lots of costume changes and stuff. And so I needed a lot of support building the set and getting the costumes in order and making sure it was what I wanted. So there was one Saturday that we were there working, building the set. There was a group of high school kids there that were helping paint, you know, getting towards the time for the show to open. So it was, of course, very, very busy in the theater because of that. People in and out of the costume room, people everywhere. So I have had a metal Yeti cup to drink water out of that keeps water cold, and I carry that thing with me everywhere. Everyone who knows me is like, where's your water cup? Because you always have a water cup with you. That's just part of who I am as a human. So at the end of the day, at the end of a very long day, in fact, I suddenly noticed that I was without my water cup. I had spoken with 4 or 5 people in very distinct places since the last time that I remembered holding onto my water cup, and they were by the tech booth. I was talking with Dave Francis, Tammy Francis's husband. I was speaking with him by the tech booth. I was speaking with somebody at the front of the stage, and I had been upstairs up talking with another 2 people regarding costumes. I had been at the front counter of the concessions bar where the popcorn machine is. So I knew that I had been those 4 places since the last time that I had remembered holding on to my water. Okay, well, everyone knows how fanatic I am about water. They've known it for a while. So, you know, there's a bit of a hustle and a bustle to try and find my water. There's probably 5 people walking around that building, going backstage, going up to the dressing room, looking at all of the shelving, looking in the refrigerator in the back. I mean, any place they could possibly think of, including all through the balcony, all through the seats, up in the men's costume room, which is right by the tech booth, and the women's costume room, which is up there, that I had been in and out of, including myself. So I got my own eyeballs. Well, at the end of the day, we cannot find this metal water holder anywhere. So we have a couple who comes in to clean the theater, and I send them an email and say, hey, the last time I saw my water thing was, you know, on stage, and then I went to these four places and I couldn't find it. So it's probably just somewhere. Can you please keep an eye out? You guys go through every part of the theater and you take the trash out, and I wouldn't have thrown it away, but you never know, weird things happen. So for 2 weeks, people searched that theater for that water cup. 2 weeks, including being cleaned weekend nights for 2 weeks. Nobody could find that cup. I come back for the third weekend, closing weekend of the show. I'm walking around drinking water out of a water bottle, which I hate because I'm a total conservationist and that goes against my belief system. I go upstairs. There's a filing cabinet just outside the door of the women's costume room. I have looked there. Susie, the cleaning woman, has looked there. Everybody that was in that theater that day looked there because they all went into the costume room to see if my cup was on a shelf. And it wasn't. Except that closing weekend of that show, there it was, sitting on top of a three-drawer filing cabinet just outside the door of the women's dressing room where everyone had been by at least three or four times. That was the last in a series of a number of things that had happened, and probably the most, you know, spectacular as far as something really happening there while I was there and something happening to something that belonged to me. So,
as I spent more time here doing other shows, there was always just an oddity about some of the spots in the theater. For me, those spots were in the balcony, house left, like kind of where we keep the costumes in the costume room. There's something a little eerie up there. I felt some cold spots in the costume room before. But it's interesting because there have also been times when I have been on stage rehearsing and thought that the director or someone was sitting up in that area of the balcony watching rehearsal, only to find out that no, there wasn't anybody else here. Now, I will say that because I was on stage, I never stopped and like looked. You know, there was just a kind of a peripheral kind of, oh, someone's up there watching.
I'm Tammy Francis. I've been with the Gaslight Baker Theater for 10 years. My husband, every time he's been here, and he is in some shows, but mostly helps with costuming and does vaudeville with us. He always has felt that the men's costume closet, which is upstairs on the one side of the balcony, feels very heavy, and he's always felt really uncomfortable during his time in there looking for suits and ties.
When I first started with that theater in 2006, the balcony was completely a storage area. There was like costumes and old lights and boxes, and it was, you know, it was like, gosh, I hope nobody turns around and looks up when they go out of the theater, just because it had been neglected for a long time. So to have that balcony open back up again, for all of those items that had been there to either go away or be stored or whatever, and to have that a place where people could sit and enjoy themselves. I don't know what we did, but I think we might have done something, because weird stuff happens up in that balcony, and even weirder stuff has happened with the tech booth. I have been a tech on a production before, and that projector booth where we used to have all of our tech equipment is a really funky, weird, interesting, crazy space.
Board members, directors, actors, theater technicians, and local students had trickled into the Gaslight by now. Tim had done his work to inform the town that I'd be arriving tonight with my recorder and encouraged all who had personal paranormal experiences at the theater to come share their experience with me tonight. So far, it was very clear the experiences involving the Laughing Lady, or in some cases, Laughing Ladies, weren't isolated incidents. which is something I've come to value highly when investigating haunted claims. And in the two stories we heard, both involved multiple witnesses at the time they occurred. But aside from the resident spirit many have deemed Laughing Lady, we heard others recount feelings of being watched from the balcony, as well as an uneasy feeling in the woman's costume room on house left of this balcony. The stories all started off somewhat playful and benign, but as my interviews continued through the night, the stories began to reveal a more ominous presence in the theater, one everyone here at the Gaslight refers to as Other Guy. When we get back from this short break, we'll continue to learn about the many other haunted hotspots in this historic theater, the unique activity experienced in these various areas, and also learn more about the mysterious character known as Other Guy. Stay tuned. I don't know about you, but October is always my busiest month. There isn't a day I'm not editing, planning an event, speaking virtually on a panel, or planning out some cool new night owl offering. Normally, I would say I don't know how I made it through all this, hitting my insane deadlines on time. But I'd be lying now, because this October, something entirely new has come into my life that I can honestly say has helped me in my most insane month of the year. Green Mountain Flower Company's new Nano Forever Natural Hemp is a proprietary water-soluble CBD additive designed for a wide range of beverages, including coffee, tea, shakes, smoothies, and even cocktails. I've now made this a morning routine, adding just 0.5 milliliters with their convenient dropper into my coffee every single morning. This little addition has changed my life. I'm relaxed, even with all the deadlines I have on my shoulders weighing me down, but at the same time, I'm the most productive and focused I've ever been. It's the best of two states to be in, honestly, when you're slammed and overwhelmed with work. But why does this product work so well? It's because Green Mountain Flower Company produces Nano Forever Natural Hemp using an advanced nanotechnology method that maximizes the bioavailability of the hemp-derived CBD for more rapid absorption into your bloodstream. Not to mention, it's THC-free, manufactured to pharmaceutical standards, and is good manufacturing practice compliant. Right now, you can pick up a bottle and add relaxed, focused energy to your morning routine by visiting greenmountainflowercompany.com and save yourself 10% by using our coupon code NIGHTOWL. What are you waiting for? Elevate your spirit today by harnessing the healing power of CBD. One quick announcement I think all you Night Owls will really appreciate. Our self-guided audio ghost tour of Pioneer Farms is now permanently available to everyone. Simply plan a visit to Pioneer Farms during their operating hours, visit their general store, and you can pick up our haunted map and brochure. In an attempt to adapt to these times and expand our show's offerings, this unique one-of-a-kind ghost tour is perfect for the season and these new challenging times we live in. This audio tour allows you to take a ghost tour on your own, at your own pace, and remain safe and socially distant the whole time. So what's the tour like? If I could describe it, I'd say it's an immersive, interactive version of our episodes on Pioneer Farms. It's all there, the history, the true accounts, and our team's discoveries and theories. But I've taken it all and created an experience that you can have on site, guided by my voice and an exclusive haunted map of Pioneer Farms that we've designed. The entire trail is 1 mile long, and the tour averages about 1.5 to 2 hours in length to take. But you're not limited to that. We encourage everyone to take as much time as they want and enjoy the beauty that is Pioneer Farms while you're there. Please note that in our partnership with the farm, you will be required to pay the farm's general admittance fee when you arrive, which goes to support this incredible living history museum. Our audio tour is a separate purchase through our website and goes to support us, the Night Owl Podcast. To read up on all the details, visit our events page on thenightowlpodcast.com.
So my name is Chaz. My mother, Tammy Francis, is on the board. And this experience happened last year when we were having a build day for one of the shows. And I do a lot of construction for the sets, and I'm also an actor. And we're doing a lot of stuff, putting screws in, moving heavy stuff. And so people get tired. I need to use the restroom. So I walk in, and it's kind of a tight space. We have like one small urinal and then a toilet. And I go to the urinal, and then sounds like the door opens and then closes. And then I hear this like kind of heavy breathing. Think to myself, man, that person must have just got finished lifting up something heavy, kind of tired. And then I finish up and turn around, No one's there in the bathroom. Open the door to the stall. No one's in there. I just thought it was really weird. And then a little while after that, I heard from Taisha, who used to be on the board or still is, and also directed here, that many women in the women's restroom said that they've heard the same thing, but not generally in the men's restroom. And I just thought, happened to me too.
As many shows as I have done in that space and watched in that space, it's inherently obvious when whoever else is there likes the show and when they don't. Because when they don't, despite replacing the batteries at the same time every single year, if a show is on that might have some dark material in it, whatever it is that's in there doesn't like it, because those smoke detectors will beep like randomly all over the place during that show. But not during the week when people are there, just during the show.
It's just the weirdest thing, because we check the fire alarms, they work perfectly fine, we change the batteries out, hit the reset button, should work completely fine. But during the show Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, when I was playing Christopher, we were just like starting the show maybe three or four scenes in, and then the one right there up in the corner just starts beeping. Like, it's not like a fire alarm going off, it's just kind of chirping. And it's just interesting that it happens on many shows, but not all. And it almost never happens when we're just hanging out at the theater or doing builds. It's always during a show.
So it was in 2009. I directed my first show in December of 2009. It was a very big show. There were 14 kids and 12 adults, and there was a lot of work that had to be done, and I was up here quite a bit by myself in the evenings working on set. And the very first time that I ever heard anything actually came from the other side of this wall. I was on stage working on something, and there was somebody hitting on the wall just like that, coming from the office. That's the office. And the thing about that office is, supposedly there's a story, I don't know if it's accurate or not, that Colonel Baker, who had this building, died in that office. So I don't really know the accuracy of that. But I thought it was really strange. It didn't scare me, but I knew that I was the only person here. I went and checked the office. There wasn't anybody there. Nothing else happened that night. During that show, some of the kids reported that somebody would tap them on the shoulder on stage or put their arm around them while they were on stage during the performance when there was no one around. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk about who might be there. Colonel Baker, who founded the theater, died in the office. And there are times when the theater doors going into the auditorium will open inexplicably, like if the air conditioning's not on, there's no airflow. So we tend to think that he kind of keeps an eye on things out there. And he kind of likes to let us know, you know, that he's still around or watching over or something. So Colonel Baker is a big one, and he's office and lobby. He's a really good, it's good energy. Everybody talks about how positive it is. We blame all of the smoke detector incidents on him with darker shows that have more serious material. When those are being messed with, we tend to go, okay, Colonel Baker, you don't like this one. We get it. We got to do art, you know, so We all sort of, or at least we did, pay homage to that.
I feel like there is some paranormal activity going on, but it's not like malevolent. They're just kind of hanging out. And I think the main ones, what we've named here, is the Laughing Lady, and then there's Colonel Baker, and then there's the other guy. So in total, we quote-unquote have three ghosts, but that's really not able to be confirmed.
It had become clear to me that everyone in the room pretty much adhered to this belief that there were three spirits in the building. I'd heard the compelling stories attributed to Laughing Lady, the various strange and mischievous occurrences attributed to Colonel Baker, but I was eager to hear more about this other guy character that many in the crowd were referring to. And just as I was finishing up my interview with Chaz, the theater's technical director stepped into the building. His name was Alan Crum, and he was about to introduce me to this mysterious presence known as Other Guy.
My name's Alan Crum. I'm the technical director for the theater. I've been involved out here for 12 years now. I've heard, like, rumors that stuff happened out here. Didn't put a lot of stock into it, but I've always been sensitive to the supernatural, to ghosts, whatever you want to call it. Not in the fact that I see them or always hear them. I just kind of know the feeling of when they're around. It's weird. I seem like I've kind of grown up with things happening around a lot. Being technical director and pretty much having to learn and rebuild most of the systems here when I first got here, a lot of what I do, I have to do alone because it's playing with the lights, it's making sound effects, it's doing all the stuff that would annoy everybody around me. A lot of that time also, I mean, I started off with the tech booth being up in the old projector room upstairs, meaning I couldn't hear anything directly down here when people were moving around, so I had microphones that I would have that would turn on when the system turned on. And knowing I can hear pin drops with those mics on, I know instantly if somebody's walked in the building or walked out, I could hear every door, I could hear everything, I could hear the toilets flushing through those microphones. And I would sit up there and I'd randomly hear pops, clicks, I'd hear doors moving around. Several times I'd actually come down from the booth, turn all the lights on, have to look around and say, hey, I know the doors are locked. I locked the doors. Only a board member could get in, and I rechecked everything. A lot of times, of course, the booth looks directly at the stage. I would feel like somebody's watching me a lot. And that feeling always came from the front left, which would be stage right from up there. We kind of dubbed the guy Other Guy. I had never heard rumors about him before, but just that feeling you get when somebody's kind of angry at you and just staring you down. I mean, of course, I had to keep the lights off because I was still testing systems and working stuff out, but not being able to see where that was coming from was a little unnerving. I'd hear steps up and down the stairwells because they're all hollow. You can hear them like an elephant if somebody steps on them. I'd catch glimpses of movement out of the booth window in the balcony. And again, knowing nobody else is in the building but me. Random stuff like that. And after a while, I just kind of started to ignore a lot of it, truthfully. A lot of us started getting uneasy when we'd do some late night work up here. Like after midnight, it got to the point where it was like, all right, if it's after midnight, we're just not up here anymore. Unless we've got more than one person up here with us. I got to the point where I just stopped all work around 11 o'clock and finally went home. A lot of where I felt angry guy kind of being in that stage right corner, the feeling once you actually go back into there gets a lot more oppressive.
I do know that there's something going on stage right. When you're up on the stage, there's something up there that people say that they sense something. I think that might be Other Guy. I don't know. But as you know, lore, it builds, and then you add things, and then you subtract things, and then who knows what or if what's really going on. But it is known among the people that have been involved in this theater for 20 years that there is something going on in this building. I'm thinking that stage right is involved with hair pulling and with missing objects. All I know is that people tend to avoid stage right when the building is empty. I've personally never felt anything on stage right. That's not where I have it. But it's more of a sinister type of a feel when you're there. Not a nice feel. Not like a nice lady or just a prankster or a jokester. That's not really what it feels like for these folks. Actually, to be honest, a lot of people don't like to talk about it. The stories that that I've heard have been more secondhand, where somebody has experienced a negative experience, most likely with what we would call our other guy, and they just don't want to talk about it. It's something that it's not really talked about. But I do know that those gentlemen here, he was running tech for us, and he shut down the work lights. We have work lights that are above the stage, and he shut the work lights off, and he started to exit, and he heard a thud, and the stage lights went back on. The work lights went back on. He talked to the spirit. He acknowledged that the spirit was there, said, you know, let's just work this out. It's all good. I'm just going to leave, and left with the lights on. You know, we'll have lights go on, lights go off when they shouldn't. And it's not easy to turn those lights on. I don't know if you noticed when I went back earlier, I had to kind of go around a corner and duck down and get down into a low switch. I think it would be difficult for somebody to sneak in, turn those things on, and then sneak out. But again, I'm looking for the logic. You know, I'm looking for the logical on that. But that was his experience.
Said, you know, everybody used to talk about this guy. You would feel him. I mean, he was stage right, and you knew he was there. If he was there, you knew he was there.
A lot of nights being at that theater, working on a set, you know, by myself, I was locked in the building. There was nobody else around. I felt totally safe from anybody outside. But if I was on stage, you know, hammering or nailing or screwing or painting or whatever, there would come a certain point in time that it was time for me to go. And the only way I can describe it is to say that there was a feeling of someone else being there who didn't appreciate my energy in the space. I was never scared. I was never nervous. I did have a sense of urgency because it was very much time to go. But I attribute that to other guy, because that's the feeling that he seemed to have given everybody that encountered his presence or its presence or whatever it is.
The first play I was in here was Fruitcakes with a bunch of kids that Lori directed. And I hadn't heard too many of the ghost stories then, but a couple of the kids in the play had said they had felt touched. And the president at the time would always tell stories about, you know, Colonel Baker was around, he was still looking over us. And so I had heard some of those stories, but I hadn't had any real personal experiences until a couple years later. We were doing vaudeville. We were all backstage. I think it was during intermission, so it was loud out here. It wasn't, and nobody was sitting against this one wall, and there were some props. And they weren't leaning against the wall. It was like somebody physically, and I saw it move, picked something up and moved it over a few spaces. It wasn't like it leaned. It was like someone actually picked it up and moved it. They didn't like it there. And I think it was sort of where there used to be a door, but now there's a wall.
There also is a spot backstage right where we keep the tools that always had a really foreboding feeling. I really didn't like to go back there. And it was, you know, you had to. That's where we keep the tools, right? And I hadn't really ever shared that with anyone until our tech guy at the time, Alan, shared with me that he hated to go back into the tool corner, that there was something back there. And I thought that was really interesting. And there was a show that we did called The Uninvited that is a ghost story. And there were some of us that were really concerned about doing a ghost story in the theater. And things just started to feel very tense and like there were lots of people here. A lot of it was, you know, really more of a feeling.
Sort of a relatively new actor to our stage. I think that she's been here for a couple of years. She relayed a story that she was up in the women's dressing room and somebody called her name. She came down and nobody was down there. And then her friends were actually, I believe that they may have been actually in the main part of the theater where she couldn't have possibly heard her name being called. I do think that there are a couple other instances of an individual's name being called.
The other weird thing that seems to have happened with a lot of females, and just because it's the woman's dressing room, is women, there are just some times when a single female or even a couple of women will be up in the women's dressing room upstairs above the stage, and there's just something in there it's the hair standing up on your arms. It's the feeling of intrusion when you walk into an empty space, like you're disturbing somebody else's peace. People just want to walk away. I've heard that there was a woman who was the principal actress of her time way back a long time ago, because of course the theater is, you know, it turns 100 basically right now. She was sort of the diva, and that was her dressing room. And you were not allowed to go in there. It didn't matter who you were. I mean, the director wasn't allowed to go in there. That was her space. And so I think that there may be, you know, some kind of residual something there. You know, you walk into a room and the hair stands up on the back of your neck, and you're like, I'm just putting my stuff down and I'm leaving.
There has been a lot of folks that will tell you the same thing, that they've heard things and they've seen things that you haven't. But a lot of people have the same stories. A lot of people talk about the other guy. So I guess that's an interesting part about the whole thing, is that there are similar stories, but then that everybody has, and then there's stories that people, you know, only a few people have heard.
Definitely had experiences prior, probably more than most. So my outlook hasn't changed, but every time a new experience happens, it's like, oh, wow. That just really happened. But yeah, I definitely believe in the afterlife. I believe in ghosts.
The experiences here, I'm still kind of, are they ghosts? Is it a parallel universe? Is it string theory? I don't know. But I think there's something. Whether it's ghosts, I don't know, but there's something.
I believe in the paranormal, but from a science point of view, since our brains give off small electrical impulses, because of the neurons firing, and then once we die, those go away. From the scientific standpoint, I don't know how ghosts would be able to do and think, like, mentally. I'm like, woo, that's cool. Scientifically, I don't know.
I tend to have a bigger belief in the paranormal, and I think that goes back to my belief in the energy system. So we're all beings of light. We're all beings of energy. We all came, you know, we're all made of stardust, like Neil deGrasse Tyson says. And I think that there's a certain cosmic truth to that. And I think that the levels of energy that we can feel are important. I think as an artist and as a theater person, as an actor, as an empath, it's my job and my duty to feel more than the average person does. And I think that's true for any artist, irrespective of the medium, because we have to recreate that energy that we take in and get it back to the world in a way that the world can understand it. So I think that by nature, we are automatically predispositioned to being open to ideas like this. I believe that we don't understand enough to make any judgment calls on it whatsoever.
I think that a lot of Lockhart is haunted. I especially think that a lot of the square is haunted. It is the start of the Chisholm Trail. You know, there's a lot of history in this town and on this square. There was a lot of hangings and transient people. And this building, this theater, has gone through so many changes. And I don't think that it's unlike any other theater, and I don't necessarily prescribe to the whole belief that all theaters are haunted, although I have been in theaters that definitely were haunted. But I do think that there is something about the creative process, especially the creative process of theater and becoming characters and telling stories, that attracts that kind of energy.
The stories surrounding the Gaslight Baker Theater were fascinating and filled me with a curiosity I hadn't felt in quite some time. And although this night had come to an end, our story of investigating this theater was nowhere near finished. Theater board member Tim continued to put in work following this initial visit. In doing so, he discovered more witnesses willing to come forward and share their stories about the theater. And although the pandemic would shortly hit our country, and halt this investigation by several months, by August 28th, we'd return, this time bringing along clairvoyant friend Sarah to see if she could possibly give credence to the many stories of the spirits believed to haunt the Gaslight Baker Theater. Join us as this adventure continues next month on November 30th in part 2 of this series. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter on our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, follow us on Instagram or Facebook at The Night Owl Podcast, and consider becoming a patron and supporting our show on patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast to stay up to date with our show's news and events. Stay restless out there. I'd like to thank my investigative team, Sarah, Alexis, Franklin, and Tao, for going on these crazy adventures with me. Nicholas Fair for his talented musical contributions to this show. Jennifer for managing our merch, Patreon, and many other irrational tasks I throw her way. My dad Sam for his incredible historical research. Bo for helping produce this busy indie show. Mikey for his assistance editing this particular episode. And thanks to Sean for his help with our story submissions, Alicia for her creative design work and marketing, and lastly, Sandra for keeping us all on schedule and on budget. And a very special shout out to my wife, Tao, for sticking with me all these late nights and long hours, and for taking amazing photographs on every case. And last but not least, David Dalton of Driftwork Sound for mastering every single episode on the tight turnarounds I give him. Please support their works by visiting our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, and clicking on the About tab. There you can find links to all their individual works and websites. And a special thank you to this episode's sponsor. If you're ready to elevate your spirit with the healing power of CBD, give Green Mountain Flower Company a try. For a limited time only, get 10% off all their products using coupon code NIGHTOWL. Visit greenmountainflowercompany.com. This podcast was mastered by David Dalton of Driftwork Sound. If you're ready to up the production quality of your podcasts or music, go to driftworksound.com. That's DRIFTWorksound.com and get your project mixed, mastered, or produced using well-established methods and unconventional techniques. That's driftworksound.com. And remember, your first master is completely free.